Today is Sunday, December 26th, 2021, and I just want to begin. My students have sent me various clippings, and you got to get used to the Israeli scene. Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener is very upset. The rabbis at Beitar Elite, us as women driving, women putting on nail polish, etc., etc. Yeah, that's one part of the picture here. On the other hand, Rabbi Grinstein is very upset, and I got more upset with Rabbi Grinstein, what he sent me. I also can't believe it. Someone in the greater Rabbi Riskin Empire came out with a whole diatribe against the Rabbanim who don't let them put up Christmas trees here. What are we afraid about? And he says, in America, we Jews were only 2% of the population, and yet they put up Hanukkah menorahs in public. The Christians are 2% of the population here. Let's put up Christmas trees. Ribbono shel Olam, it is said that the Belzer Rebbe chose to live in Tel Aviv. Rabaron, who we spoke about in class, the Belzer Rebbe, who was saved from Hitler. We'll come back to him tomorrow. He plays a key role in tomorrow's Shiur. So the Belzer Rebbe chose to live in Tel Aviv, not Yerushalayim, because there are no churches in Tel Aviv. I don't know if that's true today with all the outsiders that have come in, but it certainly was true, and I don't know if that's the real reason, but it makes a lot of sense. So I have to tell you, I'm opposed to Christmas trees on Zion Gesund. We don't persecute any Christians, but the public thoroughfare should be Jewish. This is the Jewish state. So, Mark, I just want to tell you that's life in Israel. I can go on and on from both sides of the coin. And that's why you people are needed here desperately. The more why you people who come, who are Talmidei Chachamim and Tzaddikim and Chassidim B'maseihem, and are able to live and succeed in the Western world, it is a major contribution to the state of Israel, and Baruch Hashem, it's made all the time. I want to mention YU's family suffered a big loss. Saturday night, I turned on my computer. I'm like everyone else already. Malka goes to her computer, I go to my computer, and I see we're informed that Rabbi Leibel Dulitz died. Rabbi Leibel Dulitz was a Rebbe in YU for generations. He has to be about 3-4 years older than I am. He was from New Orleans, and he always stood out in the yeshiva, a brilliant guy from New Orleans, character par excellence. How many people did you know came to YU from New Orleans? All right? Baruch Hashem, he was a very wonderful Rebbe. He taught in the morning in MTA, and in the afternoon he taught English literature, which was, I believe he had a master's in that. I don't believe he had a doctorate, but he was very knowledgeable. And he was a character par excellence. Anyone who had him as a Rebbe will never forget him. And I see here comments on his death. So there's one comment here that says it all. Norman Eisenberg, he cared more about his students than any teacher I ever had. And that was labeled Talmud Chacham. I remember his chavruta with the Joe Yurovetsky, Zichrono Levracha. It's nearer, slightly before mine in the yeshiva. And these people went on to a lifetime of Habatzah Torah and doing wonderful things. Rabbi Dulitz, I have a second connection with. Not only did we teach together, but his son Elchanan, who I extend condolences to, was one of my wonderful students in the Kollel. Has to be the late 80s, it's not yesterday. And Elchanan, who I believe also went on to a career in teaching Torah, very, very special, wonderful Talmud Chacham. One anecdote I can tell about your label, he was voted the worst, I was voted the best. What am I talking about? The boys got together, unknown to any of the Rebbeim, and we were teaching Kedushin, and they came up suddenly, every Rebbe, it was planned, every Rebbe was asked the same question. Rebbe, we learned the first parak, he said that you can get you can marry a wife, we said three different ways, bekesef, bishtav, bia. And in the second parak, we learn the ishmakadesh bo bishlucho, that you can marry a woman by sending a shliach. And the boys asked every Rebbe in the yeshiva, can you make a shliach l'kadesh ishal yedei bia? It says you can make a shliach al yedei kesef, you can make a shliach al yedei shtah. And I had mazel, I had just looked into a pamphlet of Shem of Rav Shurkin. It's the father of the famous Rabbi Shurkin, Talmud of the Rav. They're related to the Rav, it's family. And his father was a Rebbe in Chaim Berlin. And he quoted Rav Chaim on this very question. And I remember I got the question and I took it seriously. And I said, I'll tell you what Rav Chaim says in that question. And I went into Rav Chaim, and I don't want to elaborate now, it'll take too long, but the typical, this was mamish quintessential Rav Chaim, that there are two types of kinyanim involved. There's a kinyan di alma and a kinyan of kedushin. A kinyan di alma means it's a universal kinyan. A universal kinyan is money and shtar. Am I right? That? So Elliot, that you can do al yedei shliach. It goes with universal forms. But kinyan al yedei bia is only by definition between a man and a husband and wife. It's uniquely kedushin, and by definition it can't work with universal forms. A shliach will have no role here because its definition is man and husband and wife v'chulu. A beautiful answer, right on. And when the question came up and label, he took the kid. He was a rough guy. He took the kid. They say he flung him through the room. Those are the questions to ask. And then the boys discussed it after class. Everyone got together, and I came out of it. This Rebbe. And label. He went in this stuff. But that's Baruch Hashem, that captures MTA in the years that I taught there, 62 to 69. Okay, I want to come back to Vatihei Zichro Baruch. He was a wonderful person, a big Talmud Chacham, a Yarei B'Shalem.
He was also the
Baal Tokeya in Yeshua. He was also the Baal Tokeya. He was very strong, he was tall, he was heavy. He was a fabulous, so Rabbi Weiner says he was a fabulous Baal Tokeya too. All right, that's everyone I know. I don't know. I just have to walk around and I have to pinch Barak to be sure I'm touching people who are alive today. What can I do? It's a factor of age. Okay, Yehei Zichro Baruch, I dedicate the Shia in his memory. I want to mention a Gemara that we're talking about dieting. So, Reb Menashe Kleintaka cites this Gemara. I didn't cite it. I dealt with the tshuva and put it into bigger context. But the Yomo sent it to me, so I told Yomo, Reb Menashe Klein cites it. It's a very famous Gemara. I'm afraid I've quoted this Gemara more than once when I bit into a candy bar or some good cake with whipped cream on it. It's a Gemara in Yerushalmi Kedushin, Perek Dalid, subdivision Yud Bet. It's right at the end of the Yerushalmi Kedushin. And it says, Atid Adam Liknein Din V'cheshbon Al Kol Mashera A'eino V'lo Achal. And he says that if you saw something good and you desired it and you didn't eat it, you're going to have to answer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every person will have to justify himself for everything his eyes saw and which he did not eat. So you see from this Gemara that asceticism is certainly prohibited in the basic concept of Yahadut. And that's what we spoke about, that one should not overeat, but we're not obligated to abstain. The concept of many other religions is not our concept. And Reb Menashe Klein deals with this Gemara too, but a diet for a woman to look beautiful, for a woman to look healthy, again, it goes according to society. As I told you, the Russians use the Yiddish word, I heard it more than once, zaftik. They look at a woman that she has to have some flesh on her. But in the Western society, I don't have to tell you, it reaches a point where women get sick, they diet and over-diet, and they stop eating. And we've had that problem in Israel, and we have to strike a happy balance. And
well, this her, of course, that quite
often. No, I'm saying I quote it quite often myself, and it's a well-known Gemara. Okay. Now, let's move out of the diet and let's move in. Again, there's going to be very similarities here. But the whole question of sports, Rabbi Menashe Klein gets this question. Are you allowed to play sports on Shabbat? And it's not just the question of playing sports. It touches upon the whole question of Beitul Torah. And this is essential to our living as Jews. In the state of Israel today, without going into detail, but anyone who lives here understands, there's a tremendous problem. You have a certain part of the Haredi world, more the Litvisha than the Hasidisha, that people should just sit and learn, men should just sit and learn, women undertake to support them. You have to give credit to these women. I'm not happy with it, but I once had a discussion with Nechama Leibovich in Machon Gold at a Shabbos meal, so we were discussing Eshet Chayil Miyimtza. Do you really want a wife who does everything and all the man does is sit b'shachayir and talk and learning with the elders? Look, you sing Eshet Chayil Friday night, see what it says? And is this really kvodat bat hamelech panima? Don't we have an attitude that a woman should be more at home, etc., shielded from public eye? All right, this is a question at the root of our existence at this very moment in time. I need not tell you with women having to work. All my daughters have professions, have advanced degrees. All my daughters make a better living than I ever did. Baruch Hashem, all my granddaughters-in-law and my sole granddaughter has a whole business she runs. I mean, I stand in awe of her. She hired people who work for her. And every last granddaughter-in-law, professions upon professions, degrees. This one is a PhD in this. This one is an MD, a PhD. Baruch Hashem, they all daven every day and yurayot v'shleimot. But they all have professions, and this is a very delicate question. What are we supposed to learn all the time? Then who's going to run the society? Who's going to serve in the army? I mean, these are the real problems in Israel. Who's going to work in high tech? High tech makes us the wealthiest country in the world today. Just think, with farmers, you make profit, you send radishes to Europe. All right, so they make a few $100,000 a year. A high-tech, they sell off an idea, a brain, for $2 billion. It's pure profit for the state of Israel, etc., etc. So this is a very delicate question. But before we come to it, and he will answer it, let me give a little history on sports, because I saw that everyone took for granted the question is, can you indulge in sports? No, the question is, what can you do to seek a happy balance? That's what Rabbi Menashe Klein is going to deal with. But let's look at the question, can you indulge in sports? What do we find in the sources? So I want to quote to you from the most basic source of all. In all of Chazal, to the best of my knowledge, we find sports mentioned one time. And it's not a happy time. It's the Yerushalmi in Tainit, Perek Dalet, Halacha Hey, Ir Achat Chava B'Shvil Shayu Mesachakim B'Kadur B'Shabbat. You will also find this source in the Medrash Eicha Rabbah Pasha Bet Siman Dalet. And you'll find it in the Medrash on the Pasuk, Balach Hashem Velo Chamal, exactly the same source. I have to tell you that this is a source I hit upon very early in life, and it bothered me tremendously. Where did I hit upon it? Very simple. Tisha B'Av, you can't learn. All you can learn are sad matters. So when I was a kid, I learned Echa Rabate, Yehira Echa Rabate. Then I found out it's Yerushalmi, that a city was destroyed because they played ball on Shabbat. Now, most Mefarshim take this to mean not that there's a prohibition of playing ball, although you could take it simply at face value. We'll see that the Shulchan Aruch may hold that way. But most Mefarshim, over the majority, learn it's not that they played ball on Shabbat. It's that they were Mevatel Torah on Shabbat. That by playing ball, they didn't daven properly, they didn't learn properly. Ball became the main occupation, their main interest. Now, I mentioned this in relation to Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro, which is, you know, in my life, when you grow older, you sort of look back. Particularly, I was so ill last January with the corona. I have to tell you, I hovered between two worlds, and I went through my whole life. I mean, it was a process beyond me. It's not that I initiated it. And I recall, unfortunately, I don't recall, if I would recall every Gemara and all of Shas and Paiskim that I've learned, I'd be Achad Megedolei Yisrael. But that I don't recall. But every conversation and every incident, there I relive it. And I still remember Rabbi Shapiro, it has to be late 80s, I would say. He came to Shul, Young Israel of Hollywood, Florida, came to North Hollywood, he came to Shul, Ibigarashed, shaking. And it was Shabbos Minchamar, and on the way to Shul, the kids were playing baseball, regular baseball, like it's a regular day. And he was so upset. So, of course, he, right away, that tells me that Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro is a Yorei B'Shalem, that's number one. Number two, he's touching upon a very delicate issue, and I have to tell you, I agree with him. If kids would come to me to play a regular baseball game on Shabbat, I don't know, it bothers me. Shabbat, all right, you can't expect the kid to learn all day. I'm a bad example. I've been learning all day since the time I was a kid, but I'm a bad example. A kid is a kid, he has to enjoy life a little, but you have to strike a balance. And this is the earliest source I know. Now, from that Gemara, we see that Jews played ball, kids played ball. We find no source that there were leagues. You see, today there's competition. Why you got so much publicity, Ribbono Shel Olam, I would like to see them save publicity. We have a Rebbe who's taught Torah for 62 years. Little publicity. Who gives a hoot the Rebbe taught Torah for 62 years? We had miracles in this classroom. Aryeh Katzin, Rabbi Katzin, right? A few weeks ago. There's a moment in time. No. Oh, but 50 straight victories. The basketball team. The Jerusalem Post, suddenly YU's the greatest school in the world, the greatest yeshiva, wow. All right, we don't find that type of competition. Yes, Rish Lakish was a gladiator, but that's before he did Shiva. You follow me? You can't quote Rish Lakish that he was beating up Reb Yochanan. That's before, all right. What we do find, and this is crucial, why the Jews couldn't get involved, and this is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Chet Amud Bet. You'll find it elsewhere, you'll find it in many Midrashim, but it's better always to quote a Gemara. The Gemara talks about going to Itztadiyanim Ulikirkos, going to stadiums and circuses. This is the real Moshe Leitzim. And I'll tell you why. It's very simple. This is not Yankee Stadium. The last time I was at Yankee Stadium, I saw, I wouldn't say much, at least over 100 Chassidish people among the tens of thousands in the crowd. And they told me, I was there with very fine Jews, and they told me that this is their outlet. They don't go to college, they all work. Said this mainly Satmar that you're looking at, and they're ball fans. Rakef has said 1,000 times over, when you talk to a Satmar today, it's an American Satmar. It's not an Ungarische Satmar. I still knew, we'll talk about in the Monday class, the Ungarische. That today, you talk to an American Satmar, he'll respect you, will say, yes, you're a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, I'm a follower of Rav Yoelish, and you'll talk in mutual respect. That's Yankee Stadium, all right? I wouldn't say go to Yankee Stadium every day, but once in a while to cool off, whatever the word is, to cool down, correct me if I'm not using it properly.
Chill out,
that's right, chill out, correct. And but what went on at the stadiums in Rome and afterwards, Avodah Zarah and Mamash Ritzicha. And you can check the sources that the people, Lord, they sacrificed to the idols. So you can see that Chazal had a very negative attitude towards sports, towards leagues, towards competition. But there were reasons why. Literally, the most cardinal sins were done in the circuses and the stadiums. Now, where do we have another source? We have a very, very important source, which again, in all of Rashi and the Balei Tosfot, you find it in Tosfot on Be'a, Daf Yud Bet Amid Aleph. It's the eighth Tosfot on the page, according to this is printed out, and this is the source. The Ashkechan Nami the Mesachakim beKadur Shekorin Pluta Belaz beYontem Bereshit Harabim, and this is dealing with the whole question of a ball. Is it Muktzah or not? Can you pick up a stone and throw it on Shabbos? No, what do you say? It's muksa. Yeah, the joke used to make the rounds then, B'nai Brak, they used to have the demonstrations on Shabbos. I don't know why it's B'nai Brak. It can be Yerushalayim. I still remember the demonstrations. That's how Kikar Shabbat got its name. You know, a Jew was killed in one of those demonstrations, Hasidic Jew. And there are all types of unbelievable stories what went on here. It's not simple to understand how this state came to be and how we're sitting here b'menuchat ha-nefesh, and how someone like myself can boast that he did basic training at the age of 38, 15 years miluim in the army, 10 years working for the Mossad. The whole army policy on missing in action has changed because of one guy named Rakefet as a result of the shiurim in this very kollel, etc., etc. So it's not so simple to we're here, Maisa Nisim. And they played ball, but it's a ball muksa, isn't it? So the joke was that in B'nai Brak, in their bookcase, they had one section where they collected the rocks before Shabbat. You ever hear that? And that way, it's no longer muksa, because you're assigning it, you're giving it a purpose. Then they tell the joke that the guy came in, he said, you have two types of rocks here, small and big. He said, well, it depends what the crowd is that's throwing the rocks. If it's a Chazonish crowd, I use the big rocks. If it's a Rav Na'ar crowd, I use the little rocks. All right, there are plenty of jokes. But the question is the ball muksa? Then the whole question of carrying. Are you allowed to carry? Yontif, can you carry everything? Mitoch shehutra, hutra everything. Letzorech, shalol letzorech. Is this a tzorech? Mishutarabim need him. Remember my shurman, mishutarabim the oraita, v'chulu v'chulu. And that Tosfot is a very important source. I'll tell you what's interesting. Shows you how the generations have gone down. When the Mishnah Brura quotes that Tosfot, he just says that Tosfot towards the end of Perek Rishon in Beitza. When Rakefet wanted to find the Tosfot, I had Yomo do a search for me on the website. You follow? We've gone down, but this is all the Rishonim. They never quoted a Daf. They would always quote a Perek. That was it. They knew everything by heart, but all right, our generation, we're not all Rabbi Lichtensteins. Okay, so this question of playing ball hangs fire. You open up the Shulchan Aruch, and I have to tell you, you can spend hours dealing with the Tur, the Beit Yosef, the Bach. There are endless sources, but you open up the Shulchan Aruch, and it's Pashat, a Machloket HaPoskim, right in the Shulchan Aruch. Hilchat Shabbat, Siman Shin Chet. Subdivision, or Sif Mem Hey. Yeah, I'm reading it Mem Hey. I'm correct, because Mem Wav follows, but to my eyes, the Mem Hey looks like a Mem Chet. Barak, I see the little one is still not letting you sleep. But I can tell you on Shabbat, I had two great-grandchildren over, and boy, one is two, one is four. Say Zayin and Gamson mention. You know what? They're already human beings. It's beyond words. They speak English. They speak Hebrew. They jump. They talk. They respond. They eat. They make a bracha. Oh boy, they grow quickly. And I think the little one is still in diapers. It says two, just turned two. The older one already is a ganzer Mensch. Wow. So all right, Asa. This is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Asur l'sachek b'shabbat v'yontev b'kadua. Plain and simple. And look in, you look into the Mishnah Berurah, see what he says, how he describes the ball. It's muksa, you can't play. And the paskins that way l'halacha. And the Rama is mekil. You understand? We're lucky, we're Ashkenazim. You know what I'm talking about. The Sfadim always look at the Ashkenazim. You poor people, Pesach, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. So the Rav said there, yeah, they have every right to laugh at us and feel superior, except we get off easy with meat. We can eat regular meat. They have to eat only glatt, no sircha. You know, you understand? The difference. Today you don't have that problem. You know why? It's very simple. You don't have that problem today because the OU, everything is glatt. And I once asked the big shots in the OU, their biggest big shot was my dearest friend, Manny Holzer, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. And so Manny told me, it's dollars and cents, he says. I said to Manny, the Rav wasn't makbid and glatt. You remember what he said in Shia in the 50s? We all heard it. Why are you so makbid? Dollars and cents. You got to sell to the Hungarians, and you got to sell to the Sfadim. It doesn't pay to have two types of levels of hashgach. It's not Israel.
But
what's your problem?
What some of the hashgachas call glatt is different than Beis Yosef.
Yeah, no, I understand. But they do it on a level that I believe is equal to everybody. As far as I understand, the OU, the Sfadim can buy, the Hungarians can buy, everyone can buy. They take the chumras of both Sfadim. No, it's not so.
In Chicago, we used to buy Beit Yosef glatt. I think some of the Sfardim buy Beit Yosef glatt.
Anyway, the OU is glatt. And here, you have another difference. They can't play ball. Go and tell them in Flatbush, to the Flatbush crowd. I'm talking about the Yeshiva Flatbush crowd, etc. Believe me, we're well off. And the Ramah says, Yesh Matirim, and more than Yesh Matirim, V'nahagula Hakel. And plain and simple, that the minig is Lahakel. Now, you look into the Mishnah Berurah, you'll see all the different questions that come up with playing ball. But let me give you the final psak, and here I call your attention to one of the greatest svarim written in the 20th century, a man who changed the way we write Divrei Torah LaHalacha, the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata of Rabbi Neuwirth. It is a classic work, plain and simple. And the story of how he came to write it, I mean, again, you have to be part of that generation. When they were forced to, when they survived in Holland, and Holland had a very high percentage, I think it was up something like 80% of the Jews in Holland were exterminated, because Holland is right next to Germany, and they're very organized, like the Germans. And they had lists in the city hall of every resident and who was Jewish and who was not. So the Germans right away could get at every Jew very simply. And the Norith family survived with miracles, and they were forced to sail for Israel on a Shabbos. He writes this in the introduction, and he was so upset, and he vowed that he would write a book, L'Kavod Shabbos, to make up for the fact he was forced to get on the boat and sail for Israel on Shabbos. Well, he came, he lived in Beit Vagan, he was Rosh Yeshiva in Kol Torah, he was of German origins, and he fit right into Kol Torah, and his work is magnificent. Now, I'm quoting from the final edition that he put out, right before he died, came out a fabulous new edition of Shmir Shabbat Gehilchata. It's called Volume 1, because there are three volumes in circulation, but this is the third edition of Volume 1. It's Perek Tet Zayin Halacha Vav. And I have to also tell you, his footnotes are valuable. He was a London Mufak, and everything he touched upon, he opened the world to you. So he says, one siman, but this has it all. Mischachei kadua gabi shulchan ubavir kabal tennis shulchan ping pong. He knew English, by the way, very well. Ein lasa bein betoch habayet bein chutz labayet b'mokam sheyesh erev im tsarich. Okay, so right away he talks about playing on a table or playing something where you throw the ball in the air. There is absolutely no problem. As long as you can carry, there's an Erev or there's a Reshut HaYochid, there is no problem whatsoever. We paskin like the Ramah, the Kein Nohgu, and the Mishnah Berurah paskins that way. And all right, you have to understand, particularly, and the Achronim already say, and he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach here, particularly Bizman Hazeh, where you don't stum take a ball out of, like you put together scrap paper. It's mukzeva. You take a rock and you shave it down. Balls are manufactured specifically to be used as balls. They're made for that purpose. Sports, a Spalding. I remember when we were a kid, 50, whenever we lost the ball, when you hit a home run into the Reed Washington, if you hit a home run over the fence into the church courtyard on Washington Avenue between 180th and 181st, we lost the ball. That was heavy money. You remember what I write there? So we used to wait till we had three home runs in the church, and then we'd knock on the door, and the pastor would come out with his wife, Gertrude, and he would say, all right, you have to pay a price, open up a chumash with English and Hebrew, cover up the English, and we would read the Hebrew and translate, and he would say, I can read like yesterday, Gertrude, look, when he had a German accent, look how bright these yeshiva boys are. I studied Hebrew for 7 years in seminary, and I can't translate the way they do. And he would give us back the ball with joy, the balls. We didn't want to bother him all the time. We waited till three home runs. I was 1947, had my greatest summer. I hit 20 home runs in the course of the summer. All right, so now ask a question. Why does he insist upon the table and in the air? Because if you're playing football for the sake of argument where you're running in the ground, it's the whole problem of the earth, plowing up the earth. And there he quotes the Achronim, and that this is the problem. Here, let me read it to you. Mischakei kadur adamar lal desha kadon kadur regal, soccer, Israel, playing on the dirt, asurim. And even if you can say the park, they tiled it or they put asphalt on, but this they don't allow outside, because if you allow to play in one place, you'll wind up playing where there's no tiles or no asphalt, it's just dirt, and you'll be digging up dirt. But in the house, Mishtach Merutzah B'Tochabayit, he permits that you could play, I don't know, some sort of game of soccer on the floor in the house. There you don't have to worry. It's in the house. It's total reshit hayachid. And that's what he paskins lahalacha. So I would say from what we see here, we see that from time immemorial, boys will be boys, children will be children, and lahalacha, the Rama carried the day, the Aruch HaShulchan paskins this way, the Mishnah Brura paskins this way, the Shmirat Shabbat Gehilchacha paskins this way, but there's now an added factor. My dear friends, how many of you attended the first Zionist convention in 1897 in Basel, Switzerland? Barak, were you there? I was there. You'll read about it in my next published article, Be'ezrat Hashem, in the volume in memory of the Rav, 30th Yartzeit. I was there. Okay. Natan Herzl founded the Zionist movement that succeeded. To say he was the first real Zionist in modern times is totally incorrect. I've lectured on this extensively, and when you read what I wrote, you'll see why I'm correct. There were great Rabbanim who came up with the idea before Herzl. Herzl may have been influenced by Rav Alkalai through his grandfather. We just spoke about it in class. But Herzl gave his whole life. In other words, great Rabbanim, you'll say, what do you do? A great Rav, he learns, he teaches, he writes Chiddushei Torah. He's a rabbi, a public figure, runs a shul, runs a Talmud Torah, runs a yeshiva, has a family, a wife, children, grandchildren. Herzl gave up everything, including his wife, his children. They resented him. All he did was for those 9 years, when he woke up again at the Dreyfus trial, he had 9 years left to live. He died very young, 44, I believe. Totally Zionism. He put on the map. Herzl had a number of assistants who worked with him. No one was more famous than Max Nordau. I trust you've heard that. Nordau, for us as Torah Jews, remains a problem. I'll tell you why. Nordau was raised, his father was a big Talmud Chacham. He was raised properly. And like many others in the generation, Lo Aleinu took Yiddishkeit and threw it all away when they moved into the modern Western world. And he was a genius. He was a very famous doctor. He was a psychologist and an MD and a writer. He was a man of Renaissance, a Renaissance person. And then he was caught up in Zionism. It is said, it may be anecdotal, it may be true, it may be not true, but they wouldn't tell this anecdote about you or me. They say that Herzl went to Dr. Nordau to examine him. He said, I'm crazy about the Zionism, about saving the Jewish people. Am I normal? And Nordau examines him and says to him at the end, if you're crazy, I'm crazy too. And he became very big. He was second in command in the Zionist movement. Now, our problem with Nordau is he was married to a non-Jewish woman, and they had a very good marriage. He never divorced her. His children are not Jewish, etc., etc. And that's very hard to accept. Herzl, say what you want. His wife was Jewish, his children were Jewish, etc. But for us, Max Nordau remains an enigma. He could come back to his people, and he came back to his Jewish identity, but his wife remained a problem. I've had that in the Rabbinate. I had one very prominent Jew, a big Baal Tshuva, who did wonderful things, but he was a Kohen married to a Gioret. And I remember a fight broke out, like all of the other politics in a shul. How can he duchen? He duchened. He had a psak. They asked me. I was caught in such a quagmire. I wouldn't wish it upon, I don't have enemies, but upon my detractors who think I'm too frum or not frum enough. Okay, I'll put it that way. You read me? You read me, Natan? Fine. So what? He remained married. We had cases where the Rav also dealt with it. He understood they're not going to get divorced, but he told us how to deal with the children, etc. Now, why am I mentioning Nordau? Okay. For 2,000 years we were in exile. Tell me, was there ever a Jewish army in exile? Was there ever a thriving Jewish economy in exile? We Jews, a good part of the world beyond us, we were not part of. You might say that was very good. That's the whole idea of a ghetto. We retained our uniqueness until today. People want to build the ghetto. And I've spoken about this many times, that in the Torah world we have a portable ghetto today. You can't have a physical ghetto, but the Litvish world became Hasidish. Who would ever dream that every Litvak has to dress the same way? That's the antithesis of the Lithuania that I grew up in, or the Lithuania that the Rav spoke about. Read my work on the Rav, where, again, it's not Rakefet speaking, I'm quoting Rebbe word by word by word. All I'm doing is translating from Yiddish into English. So Nordau introduced the idea that if we're coming home to be a normal people again, physical attention and sports is very important. And that idea gave birth to the concept that if we're coming back to be a people, it's not just we have to have an economy, we have to have an army, we have to have a police force. We have to have sports. We have to develop our bodies. We have to know how to be proud examples of physical achievement. And if you're religious, physical achievement, Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, this was Nordau. It was picked up by Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Rabbi Cook was a Renaissance individual, a Gadol Shebegadolim. I don't have to tell you, if you see the way the Chafetz Chaim related to Rav Cook and other Gedolei Gedolei Israel, they related to him, Shichmo Lamala Mikol Ha'am. But he was a Renaissance man. It wasn't just Shas, the Paiskim, and Machshava, and philosophy, and Chassidut. He was a Renaissance individual. He writes about Michelangelo, that there's a certain Ruach HaKodesh in his paintings and what he achieved. He also wrote about sports, and he had a number of essays where he praised the new Jew is coming home. He's a farmer, he's a soldier, he's a sportsman, developing spirituality and physicality. Very fascinating. Now, if you want the sources, I'll tell you who to contact. Among them, my many students that I never really knew from the classroom, there's the Schwat family. Today, again, time moves on, it doesn't mean much to you. Schwat, C-H-W-A-T, I believe, is the way they spelled it. And this was a wonderful family, came in Aliyah from the United States, has to be in the 80s. I remember when they were friendly with people we knew in common, and when we went to Russia the first time, the Schwat, the parents, were going back and forth, and they brought us cans of tuna fish to take with us to Russia. You got to remember, there was no tuna fish in Israel at the time. Today we're flooded with tuna fish. But even if you could get tuna fish in Israel, it had Hebrew lettering on it. That's a no-go. You couldn't wear pants that came back from the cleaner where you had Hebrew lettering, your name or you follow. And you got to understand, we were going in under false identity that we live in Queens, etc., etc. And the Schwartz brought us tuna fish. The Holzers brought us Hershey Kisses. You don't know how handy that came in. You have no idea what we... I could only go at that point in life between terms in January, and I wouldn't advise you to spend winter in Russia if you didn't grow up there. If you grew up there, you're used to it, but boy, to function in 30 degrees below zero, it's not easy at all. Hashem Yirachem. And the Schwartz, their son, Rabbi Dr. Ari Schwartz, I think in Hebrew it's spelled Shevet, Shinvet, Shevet. In other words, Schwartz became Shevet, a Hebraized name, automatically. You didn't have to do it officially. It automatically, Schwartz is Shevet. He runs the archives at the Rabbi Cook house in the center of Yerushalayim. It's on Rehov Rav Cook, and he runs the archives, and he has published a great deal. He could probably give you all the sources where Rav Cook mentions sports. But these one of the, by the way, one of the biggest problems in Rabbi Cook's time, it carries over until today, adult today, thank God it's a little bit better. When were all the sports events held in Israel? The Jew is waking up, the Jew is coming home, the Jew works 6 days a week, everything was on Shabbat. I need not tell you of all the Chilul Shabbat involved with sports. Now, today it's a little bit better. First of all, there are teams. The Mizrahi organized its own league, Elitzur. And the Mizrahi leagues, there are no sports on Shabbat, obviously. But in addition, there are now cities where you have soccer teams. Soccer is the big sport in Israel. And there's so many from people involved that no games on Shabbat. Rav Avadja, these guys in America who were just drafted into baseball, one from Woodmere and one from the coast, so one of them won't play at all in Shabbat. He's just thinking of being a catcher or a pitcher. The other one says he'll play on Shabbat. You know, he's already a lamdan, he knows the Tosfos, and so you should know that in Israel, Rav Avadja had these shilas from Sfada kids who were Mesorati to begin with, who became more frum as time marched on, and they say he was b'leit breira, he was matir, as long as you don't do any chilul Shabbos, just the playing itself, he was matir. Of course, I cannot. I can only agree with the psakas of b'diyevet, which I'm sure Rav Avadja meant. But lachatchilar, I look forward to the day that in Israel there will be no sports matches whatsoever on Shabbat, b'ezrat Hashem. And this depends upon you and me, and inspiring another 1 million Shemesh Shabbos Jews to come in Aliyah. Okay. So I believe that I've given a decent introduction. It's a fascinating topic. There's no doubt in my mind that part of the Israeli scene, I still remember 1977, it seems, if I recall correctly, our basketball team won everything in Europe and won the championship, and they were dancing in the streets of Yerushalayim. Oh, is that a big achievement? And I was teaching at Michlala then, and Michlala was a very important institution. It's an institution which today has to find its goal. Originally, Michlala was established for brilliant women who were afraid to go to a university in Israel, the whole atmosphere. Today we've achieved that at Hebrew U, when its students stay and they all go bananas, it's Purim for them. They now have a separate party for the religious people, men and women separate. If anyone would have told me that Hebrew U will one day have separate parties between men and women on students' day, Ashrenu Shezachinu. So today, why should a girl go to Michlal? She can go to Hebrew U, she can go to Bar Ilan, she can go to Tel Aviv U, go to the Technion, etc., etc. So Michlalah today, mainly it's for men who are getting master degrees. They run programs, the masters, for teachers. You get a more salary, and one day it's like Torah, one day it's like Lander, one day for men, one day for women, like Lander College in Flatbush, etc. And anyway, when this big celebration broke out, so one of the famous Rabbanim in Michlalah was furious. What are they dancing? Avodah Zarah, Shah, this is what they're happy about. And I don't know, I took a different approach. I said, Ashrenu Shezachinu, we live here with tension. I don't have to tell you the Yom Kippur War, what it did to us. Even now, what's going on in Chumash, what's going on in Shomron, what's going on when some of the members of Bennett's cabinet open their mouth, you have to rip Kriya. It's just a terrible thing here to listen to the news. You have to sit in your birthday suit in a sealed room, because otherwise you have to rip kriya as you hear what this son of Israel said and that son of the Amoritz, maybe the Lavoch Rebbe would smack my face. I shouldn't call them son of Israel, just ignorant people. We have to outreach. All right, I can't help myself. It's been a bissel a litvak and a bissel ich bin chab gavarna chsidish yid. Okay, somewhere in the middle. But I said, you know, this is wonderful. We won the championship. Everyone, yeah, it was Tal Brody of American origins, the famous basketball player. We have to be happy. They're letting off steam. They're celebrating. Baruch Hashem, Israel is on the map. Good publicity. All right, let the machloket live on. Please, we have to find a happy balance. Now, this question of recreation, restoring, chilling out, where do we balance it? And again, these type of questions, we can't give a black and white answer. We can't give a black and white answer because we're all different people. If you look at that famous picture of 1960, the class picture, I throw it out. If any of you want to be famous, take off 2 years. Research each one. Rakefet did you a service. He slaved with his... My wife helped me. I can't tell the whole story now, but she ultimately identified the last person through the bow tie. You got 29 different names there. It's an amazing thing. Almost every one of those 29 names went into Chinuch, went into Rabbanut. And more than that, you have all the leaders. Rabbi Braunschweiger, who left the yeshiva in anger. It's not frum enough. Rabbi Lam is not frum enough. He organized Lander College. He was the first Rosh Yeshiva. Am I right? Barak. Natan, do you know this or you don't know it? God, you guys don't live history. It's in your... No, it's not in your... God, time moves on. It's 20 years ago. How old were you 20 years ago? 5 years old. You didn't know what's going on in the Torah world? Please. Okay, have it your way. So, there's Rabbi Braunschweiger. You don't have a more right-winger than Rav Abba. When I came to Nachem Avil, I'm the only one who attended the funeral of his wife. She died young, lo aleinu. He was married to a great lady, Miriam Monk. It was Rabbi Monk's. It was Rabbi Jacobowitz's sister, wife Emily, Lady Emily's sister. I attended the funerals Friday in Yerushalayim, and that Sunday night already I was being Menachem Avil in Borough Park. And I come in, and I couldn't believe it. Two separate entrances. Two separate entrances. And he tells me not to tell the story of how they met. I couldn't believe it. God, you that much right wing that even the story... The story's legendary, but ask me after class if you don't know it. I'll tell it after 10:35. Okay? Remind me. So there's Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. You don't have anyone more centrist than Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. And there's Saul Berman, the godfather of Eidah, of Chovevei Torah. Wow, what a class. Now, these were all talmidim with the Rav. They're all sitting there with the Chilu Rechimu. And the Rav would be proud of almost all of them. But you see, it's an individual question. How much time do you vote? How much time do you do? I'm an example, good or bad, I don't know. My whole life is Torah. Even when I got a master's and another master's and a doctorate, all Torah. I have other classmates went on, sitting there, Zizi Rifkin, and I'm a world-class chemist. I think he organized a whole factory of producing Kerrigan, right? Big London. There was a Talmud of the Rav, one of the great Talmudim, Gershon Sadowski, not Sladowski, Gershon Sadowski. There were two brothers, Gershon Yitzchak. Gershon was a Gaon Adi, he was on a level of Aaron Lichtenstein. You know what he did? If you had a problem with the IRS and over, I think it was $100,000, You went to his desk. He was one of two people in Baltimore at this focal IRS office that dealt with problems of machlokes between you and the American government of over $100,000. Then he retired, and the last time I saw him, he's sitting in Borough Park in a base medrash, back to what he was doing. A great individual. But you see, it's very individual. Okay, now, with this in mind, Reb Menashe Klein gets the question, are you allowed to play ball? In other words, how much time do you devote to playing ball? Are you allowed to beat the Torah? And he quotes the sources that we just quoted. And you see that the whole machloket and Tosfot, the whole question of the ball is a question of Shabbos. Is it muksa? Isn't it muksa? You saw halacha l'maisa. Can you run around on the grass? Which is an interesting shaila, right or wrong? Can you run around on the grass on Shabbos, and et cetera, et cetera?
But what is running or like nuts and smoothing the?
You mean you have to smooth it before they play? It doesn't mention that. It just says running around on the grass. It's digging up automatically. It's all machlekes in the Gemara, einam miskaven, etc. But here, there's no need to be mud here. It's not like someone walking to shul that he has to walk through mud. You follow? Snow. The Achronim deal with it with snow. But what do you see from that? He says that on Shabbat, it's a shaila. During the week it's mutter. So what's the question? But he says, V'chol zeh l'hamon ha'am. This is for the masses. But they can certainly play ball. There's no question about it. But for the B'nai Torah, that's exactly his words, of all the B'nai Torah, he says, for them, it's a much deeper problem. Beitul Torah. Where do you draw the line? How are you mechanech? What do you do with your life? And here the question is infinitely different than simply playing ball. Now, he quotes the source. And this is, this introduces you to a totally different world. Rishonim, manuscripts. I've lectured on this many, many hours over the last 62 years, I should say. By the way, this is my 62nd year of teaching. The 63rd year begins in September, and Chodesh Elul be Ezrat Hashem. I checked out, remember I asked you? And I checked it out. 62nd, okay. So, you're learning. When we walk into class, when I was a Rebbe teaching Gemara, some the time I came in Aliyah, I never taught a text again. But when I taught a text, you didn't start asking what the real text is, who put the text together, the variant reading. You teach a text. You're using the same Gemara my Rebbe used, and he's using the same Gemara Reb Chaim used, etc. But with the advent of Wissenschaft, academia, whatever you want to call it, Chochmat Yisrael, scientific Jewish scholarship, Bernard Rebel Graduate School. Wow, when you look at a text, who put it together? Where does it come from? How do we know it's correct? Why are there variant readings? Then, what about when you discover new material? And here, the classic example is the Cairo Geniza. Cairo Geniza was, they were throwing things away in this Geniza. It was in Fushtat, the suburb of Cairo, I believe. And for hundreds of years, papers are collecting. Suddenly, a Jew from Yerushalayim, a Jew from Yerushalayim is in Egypt. He takes out some papers, but he didn't stay long enough. Meaning, there was a Kiddush place where he came from in Mea Shearim, and he had to get back in time. He went, but the word went out. He started publishing a little bit what he found. Solomon Schechter got some wealthy women to support him, came here with a little crew, and he worked over the Geniza, bribed and whatnot, loaded up donkeys. I was in the Geniza in Cambridge. It's unbelievable. There's still papers that the fragments that they haven't deciphered yet. So you found a world of material. Wow. It opens your eyes. Halachically, you have to deal with a very simple question. Can you change the halacha on the basis of some new tshuva you found that no one saw before now? That's what I call it. Chashim Mishpat Simin Chafhei. And there's a world on that question. Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk had a student, Rav Binyamin Menashe Levine. Don't forget the name. He decided, after studying for a number of good years with Rav Kook, he wanted to go to university. Hebrew U just opened. So Rav Kook said to him that if you're going to go to university, learn something that will benefit Torah scholarship. And he became an expert in Gaonic literature. The Otsa Gainim is Rav Menashe Binyamin Levine. You have through Bab Metzia. Then he died. He never finished it. What he never finished until today, no one has been able to complete. Bernardino Graduate School Rabbi Reb Meir Simcha Feldblum did Sanhedrin. Now I understand they're working on Baba Batra in Israel. But what that man knew, what he accomplished, and he put together Perushim and Tshuvot. Look at it. Trust me, you have it downstairs in the library, or it must be online. Otsa HaGaonim, look what he did. So it's a very fascinating topic, but we have to zero in on the Rambam. The Rambam we know, Mora Nevuchim. The Rambam we know, Mishneh Torah. We know there are a number of Igrot that the Rambam wrote, Teiman, etc. They're also constantly tshuvot that have surfaced from Maimonides. I have when I turned 60, I was honored by two organizations that I've helped over the decades. And at the dinner, they presented me with the Huntington manuscript. The Huntington manuscript is a manuscript that was in, I believe it's Cambridge or Oxford. It was owned by the Huntington family. And it's Sefer Mada v'Sefer Ahava from the Mishneh Torah. And what's unique about it is the Rambam signs on the manuscript that he went through it, and it's correct with his signature. And they have the original. And I have a copy, a beautiful copy that's like, it's worth a lot of money. It's a perfect copy. Now, in what they put out, the Huntington manuscript, they put out fragments of the Rambam's Kitvei Yad Mishneh Torah from the Cairo Geniza. I mean, it's an amazing thing. Imagine if we would have the original manuscript. Wow. And this is scholarship. Now, the Tshuva de Rambam, there was an edition that came out in the 18th century, a more traditional edition with not all the academia and the commentary and footnotes. In modern times, in the 30s, Professor Avram Chaim Freiman put out Tshuvat HaRambam, what was available at that time. Professor Freiman was one of the giants of Torah. He was a musmach of Hildesheimer Rabbinic Seminary in Berlin, a giant of Torah in the full sense of the word. He came in Aliyah. He was professor at Hebrew University. His work on marriage is classic. He has an entire volume of understanding what Chuppah Kedushin are about from the time of Matan Torah until the 20th century. Unfortunately, he was killed by the Arabs, by the terrorists, by the murderers who still kill us until today, lo aleinu. Ayin Chet. Have you ever been in Rehov Ayin Chet? Rehov Ayin Chet, it's over, what's the, Romema. Rehov Ayin Chet, which leads to Har HaTzofim, takes you to that area, is named after a convoy that was ambushed by the Jordanians in 48. killing 78 people on that convoy. They were permitted, it was part of the truce, that they could go. We had an enclave in Mount Scopus. We had our library there, the Hebrew U. Everything was cut off, but they were allowed to go once a month, whatever it was. And he was on the convoy. It had nurses, doctors, professors, because the hospital was the building. There were things there you wanted to take out. And he was going to check the library, and they were killed. He was killed, and his family never got over it. I happen to know members of his family. One of my closest friends was married to his granddaughter. It's not his granddaughter, it's his great-niece. And lo aleinu, but this professor is married to his great-niece. Died in the first wave of corona. He has a brother. You all know his brother, Bernard Vavrogradsky, Professor Richie Steiner. Mean anything to you? This is Mark Steiner, Richie's older brother, was married into the Freiman family. Okay, now, let me go a drop further. When I came in Aliyah in 69, so thank God we had enough sense to buy right away. We were in the absorption center, and by October, we came in July, the boat docked July 5th, and by October, we bought on Berlin 18, which was a miracle. We didn't listen to everyone said, you can't buy, prices are going to go down, it's unheard of, we're at a paying $25,000 for an apartment in Jerusalem. It can't be, this will continue. I don't want to tell you what has happened to Rav Berlin and what it costs to breathe air there. If you walk into the street now, they put something on your nose and charge you for breathing air. Okay. Take it with a sense of humor. Now, so the first few weeks when I moved into Berlin, I was so happy to be out of the rabbinate. I can daven all over. I went here, there, everywhere. And then within a few weeks, I said, you idiot, you got to go through Shas and Paiskim, don't waste your time. And I picked up the 630 Minyan or Rivka, where I've davened for the last 52 plus years. Now, at that 630 Minyan, sitting right in front of me, was a person known as Professor Yehoshua Blau, B-L-A-U. Make believe you know who I'm talking about, so the ignorant pass for the wise, and not vice versa. Professor Blau was a kid from Hungary, from a well-to-do family. And they got out in the mid-30s. He was a teenager. He just died a year or two ago. His name is still there. He was well into his 90s. Sat in front of me, and this man's expertise was dealing with Kitvei Yad, with Ketshuvah, but more than that, here's a kid who came on Aliyah, running away from Hitler, must have been 17, 18 years old. Barak, how good is your Hebrew? How good is your Arabic? Imagine if you came at the age of 17 or 18, he became the greatest scholar in the country, the head of the Vaar HaLashon of Hebrew and Arabic. His addition of the Tshuvat HaRambam Maimonides is the most fabulous edition in the world. He translated from Arabic to Hebrew. In other words, some Tshuvat to begin with were in Arabic. Some Tshuvat were in Hebrew. Depends who the Rambam was writing to. If you check all the letters I've written over the years, I've written, if they write to me in English, I write back in English. They write to me in Hebrew, I write back in Hebrew. The Rambam answered according to the language he was written to. And this edition, which came out in the early 60s, it's the classic edition. It's three volumes. It was put out by Mekitze Nirdamim. That's a society that began in Germany 150 years ago, waking up those who are asleep. It was a society began to publish Kitvei Yad that we never had before. And Professor Blau later wins Pras Yisrael for his monumental work on Tshuvat HaRambam. wait a second, Yomo, I'm off the air. I can't win. Who knows how I'm looking at you, I'm not looking there. I hope they're seeing me. Why does that happen?
It's an unknown error.
So how do you correct it? Start all over. Launch meeting. I feel so bad. There are people on there who are staying up all night. Someone has to watch me on their Zoom with their little thing and see if this happens to tell me, because I... connecting.
Recording in progress.
Okay. Okay, I can continue?
Yes.
Okay, I apologize. Are you hearing me? Because we were knocked out here. Okay, I'm picking up where I left off. Now, Professor Blau won Pras Yisrael, and mainly his most famous work. You're not hearing me? I don't know that. He's saying hello. Okay, that I see. David Phillips Beryl is there. Okay. But Professor Blau's most famous work is the Tshuva to Rambam. This is the Tshuva that Reb Menashe Klein quotes, and almost his whole tshuva is based upon this tshuva to Rambam. I'm quoting, let me give you the exact quote. I would imagine that Professor Blau's work is also available on Hebrew books. Tshuva to Rambam, the Mekitzi Nidobim edition, Kerach Bet, Tshuva Reish Chaf Dalet. And the question is fascinating. And he's translating from the Arabic. She'ela me'aram tsova hamutal lishmoa shira im shirei ha'ezah haravim v'zema. And what's the question here? Are you allowed to listen to the songs the Arabs are singing in your neighborhood? And I don't have to tell you, this is classic integration. What can we take, what can't we take? How many of us grew up on the Beatles? The Beatles conquered the world. I remember in BMT in the 70s, the Rebbeim would give entire shiurim trying to understand the Yellow Submarine. And what it represents. The Beatles, Pink Floyd, Shem Rishon Yerkov, Sony Israel and that band. Are you a brick in the wall? The teachers, how do they relate to you? I remember my own Musa talks on that very topic. And so the Rambam gets this sort of very innocent question. Rav Avadya Yosef, all the work that has been done on Rav Avadya's life, they haunt him that in Egypt, when he was chief rabbi, or Av Beit Din in Egypt, listen, chief rabbi, he was Av Beit Din for, I believe it was from 47 to 49, something like that. And he used to listen to the famous Egyptian singer. There was a woman there that was world famous, and Rav Avadya loved listening to her. And of course, that raises all the questions. An Egyptian singer, a woman, Kalisha, a radio, phonograph, how do you listen, etc., etc. And halacha lemaisa, Rav Avadya listened in Egypt. All right, here's the question. And the Rambam's answer, Etzem hazema bahani gunim kulam asurim afilu ein omrim alehem milim klau. And the Rambam says very simple that just to listen to Goyish and Igunim is forbidden. It's after Churban HaBayit. Everything was outlawed. And he quotes the Pasuk, it's Hosea, Perek Tet, Pasuk Aleph, Al Tismach Yisrael El Gil HaAmin. That a Jew can't rejoice, he can't be involved with the joy of the world. He's a Jew, he has different values, different commitments, a different Weltanschauung, and we can't get involved with Gentile happiness. And the Rambam goes on that if you listen, and all this is from manuscript, and all this is edited, and all this has footnotes. He did a fabulous job. Aliba di emet shall asulishmoa the vatip shut, that to listen to the Gentiles, even if it's not songs, he says, but if it's just their foolish ideas, totally forbidden. And he lists out Isa Shmiat Davar Tipshit Univalat Papeh. Well, I don't have to tell you. Can you play with the websites? Can you play with the computer? You have website on top of website where they're cursing, where Tipshit Nivel Peh, par for the course. That's only one Isa. Isa Shmirat Shira, how are you allowed to hear someone speaking and playing musical instruments after Churban HaBayit? And then he says, and if in addition to the music you're listening in a tavern and they're drinking wine, that too is forbidden. And he quotes a pasuk, quotes a Gemara, you'll see all the sources, and he goes on, and totally, absolutely opposed. But here's the heart of the tshuva, that what is Torah about? We in our lives have to seek shleimut. Anything that brings about shleimut is permissible, is desirable, is advocated. And we should never get involved with that which intrudes upon our shleimut. Holilut, schok, shirei chol, absolutely forbidden. And the source of all this, Shenihiyah Goy Kadosh. And this, of course, is what the Torah tells us. Am Skula. Am Kadosh. We're different. We're unique. And he says, maybe we can't demand this from the simpletons, but those of us who want to be ksheirim, using in the sense of proper, good, complete Jews, chas v'chalila, to get involved and be in places of drunkenness and wine and song, v'shalom. V'katav Moshe. And that's the tshuva. It's not a long tshuva, so I didn't read the whole thing to you, but I gave you the heart of the tshuva. But Rav Menashe Klein takes this tshuva and says, the heart of the Rambam is Am Skula, Am Kadosh. How do we achieve it? This is the challenge. We have to strike a happy balance. There's no question that someone who cares and is a Talmud Chacham, we can demand more. His shleimut will be more spiritual. He can keep away from all this alien influence. Someone who's what Maimonides calls Hamon Ha'am, all right, we have to inspire them. Could be we can't totally keep them away from all this influence, but the influence of Torah has to be greater, has to be dominant, has to be at least at the nucleus of their thinking, their existence, their actions. And from this trivia you see, you can't give a black and white answer. To go and take the Rambam's answer and totally say everything is forbidden. Take the play, the movie, the book, Fiddler on the Roof. So you can look at Fiddler on the Roof, on a very elementary level. It's a play based upon Shalom Aleichem, based upon the actuality of what happened to the Jewish people in modern times. The eldest daughter marries who she chooses, but is frum. The next daughter already rebels more. One final daughter marries a goy altogether. And it's our people. Now look at it a little deeper. There's a song there, Sunrise, Sunset. Is this the little girl I carried? Is this the little boy at play? I don't remember growing older. Wow, so did they. Take that paragraph. It's godlike. It's overwhelming. It's beautiful. It's insightful. It's philosophic. It's Sefer Kohelet right before your eyes. I'll tell you more. Tradition. Tradition, right? A little song. I want you to know, I have taught two students in the Kollel over the decades. When I asked them, how did your parents become religious? They told me. Fiddler on the Roof. The song, tradition. Think about it. It's very powerful. You take some of the songs of Simon and Garfunkel. So if you read The Yeshiva World by Willy Helmreich, Sichrono Livracha, it hurts me. He was also died in the first wave of Corona. I knew him very, he thanks me in the introduction, I had published Revel already and he came to me for advice. And it's a very wonderful volume, The Yeshiva World. It's from the 80s, it's obviously dated. And I told you more than once that the Rabbi Scherer of Moshe Scherer said to me he's very thankful to Willy Helmreich. I said, why? He said he uncovered problems in the yeshiva world in the sexual level. He didn't write about it. He didn't want to harm the yeshiva world. And we have to thank him. He was a professor, frum guy. His parents were survivors. But he knew what he could write, and he didn't want to harm. And
I think there was an update. After the 80s, I think there might have been another edition.
No, there wasn't an update. There was a recording where he revealed all his notes. It's available online. All his notes of interviews with the Rabbanim, with the Rosh Yeshiva, very, very fascinating. But there's one part in the book that Garfunkel, Simon and Garfunkel, am I pronouncing his name right? The
Garfunkel.
So they were very popular in the yeshiva world. So he says these kids were called in by the Rosh Yeshiva, not in why, it's one of the right-wing yeshivas, and why you they wouldn't call you. What are you listening to? I heard in the dormitory the lyrics in English. He says, no, those are two yeshiva boys who wrote some lyrics, and I don't know. Maybe one of them did go to Flatbush Elementary. Anything is possible. But he heard the two yeshiva boys. Suddenly he was happy. But you see, Amskula. How do we achieve it? Amskula. And Am Kadosh. How do we achieve it? What do we want out of life? How do we live our life? How do we run a country? We have a country today. It's ours. How do we run it? How are we Makadesh Shem Shemayim V'Rabim? And see, there's no black and white answer. Now, I'll tell you one little story here. A lot of people have trouble singing HaTikvah. Why do they have trouble singing HaTikvah? Who wrote HaTikvah? Naftali Hirtz Imba. Okay? Naftali Hirtz Imba, I may be the only person alive that had a direct connection to Naftali Hirtz Imba. No, you're wondering, what's my connection? Imba died long before I was born. It's very simple. His niece was the treasurer of my sisterhood in the shul I built in Maplewood, South Orange, the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County. Ehrenkranz was her last name. Her mother was his younger sister. And she would regale me, I think I write about this in Washington, regale me with stories about him. First of all, you should know, he was a genius. He was crazy. You know how many geniuses are crazy? He was off the wall. He knew Shas, he knew Kabbalah. He played around with this type of mysticism and that type of mysticism. He was a Shomer Shabbos for most of his life. He was a drunkard. I mean, her mother used to smuggle in liquor. When he was in the hospital, she would tie a bottle under her skirt and walk in with that. No one checked. The woman, you know, yeah, don't give a body search, at least not in those years. And she would bring the liquor to him in his bed, and he was happy. And she would regale me with stories. But when all is said and done, you know, he wasn't a tzaddik, that's for sure. Now, what bothers people more than anything is liot amchavshi be'atzenu. Now, liot amchavshi, the problem is they're using it in the modern sense. When we were going up, chavshi meant free. You're not a slave. Liot amchavshi. Today, you use the word anachnu chavshiim, as if they think they're free by not being religious. Idiots, you're the biggest slaves in the world. You're slaves to your own Aveda Zara and your own desires. It's a disgrace who you are. But you think you're Chavshi? All right, but you can't change the world Chavshi. So you should know, I've always advised people, if you have any problem singing Hatikva, Liyotam Skula Biyatsenu, change the chavshi into skula, and you've solved the whole problem, and it doesn't skip a beat. Li yotam chavshi, li yotam skula, biyatzenu bi. Beautiful. And am skula says it all. Beautiful, magnificent. This is what we have to strive for. And could be that each one has to do his share, has to add a little color. Not everyone can learn Torah 24/7. People have to succeed in business. People have to succeed. Medical doctors, science, research. I don't have to tell you, high tech today. But if we all add it to the picture and it's based upon Kedusha, Vitara, Am Segula, we have achieved. And this is his answer. Now, next week I'm going to give you another source that he quotes, and you'll see between this Trivet HaRambam and the source I'll quote next week, you have the whole basis of how we have to live, what the goal has to be in the big world in which we find ourselves today. It's a big world, but a global village. What the computer has turned it into, it's even more than that. When we were growing up, when we learned Pirkei Avot, Kol Masecha B'Sefer Nichtavim, Ozen Shemat, V'Yad Kotevet, No, you were cynical. You say, come on, Rebbe, is this really, they're writing down what I say? And take a look on the computer. It's all there. It's all there. Everything you, God, they, it's beyond words. It has an advantage and a disadvantage. The advantage is you can type in Lubavitcher Rebbe to YouTube, and you got to take off the next 49 years to just see what they have. That's the advantage. The disadvantage is, who needs a new Rebbe? You have the Rebbe there, right there in front of your eyes, and they translate. You don't have to know Yiddish anymore. It's a, but Leo, wow, what a world. Okay, so to reiterate, we spoke about today in depth sports. Again, hard to give a black and white answer. If a kid comes over to me, 6'7", and he says, Rebbe, I'm interested in basketball. It's my biggest interest. I say, knock out 1 hour a day learning. Go through all Mishnayot and Shas, and the rest of the day, deal with basketball. If a kid comes over to me, 5'9", and I see a bright kid, and he says, I say, Master Shas and Paiskin. We need poskim, know how to poskim. Oh, come on, this is an art. This is an art. I was zeichel here in Aguna, but I have to tell you, it's many years of learning went into it. It's not so simple. And you have to, and the Yachron already say that shimush of psak is shelet and shubat. And Baruch Hashem, zachiti, Rav Ovadia Yosef put his hands on my shoulders. Right? Not a small matter. But you have to, you have another, my brother's the best example, my middle brother. He learned, he was a Talmud, he was, Rav Heschel Schachter is here now, ask Rav Heschel about Lenny Rothkopf. That was his chavruta for many, many, many years. Elementary, high school, college. So my brother was a Talmud mufak of Rav David Lipschitz. And Rav David is constantly telling him, "Du darf sein wie ein Bruder, you know, you should be like your older brother, halten bei lernen, learn, and this and that." And finally the day comes that my brother tells Rav David, "Rebbe, I'm going to medical school." And Rav David grabs him with his two, I don't know, with his two hands, with warmth, and he says, I'll say it in English, but he said it in Yiddish, he says, "Listen to me. Until now, you weren't learning like your brother. All right, if you make a mistake in learning, it's not the end of the world. So your mater, a kli, a ben yoima, and then a ben yoima, you understand? It's not the end of the world. A doctor, if you make a mistake, can have very serious consequences. Study very well. Be very cautious that you know it all. And you'll be the best doctor." Right? That's a fabulous approach. So how does my brother wind up? He winds up, his son is a famous Rosh Yeshiva. Remember, I showed you the big article on him. And he has another son-in-law who runs a series of kollelim for people who did army and want to continue in kollelim. He heads up a whole series of kollelim, Baruch Hashem. All right, he has another son, a dentist, another son, high-tech. But son of Rosh Yeshiva, can I inherit? I have grandchildren, many doctors, PhDs, etc., medical doctors, etc., high tech. Only one grandson teaching. They read that many of them that they do dafyomi, all right, but beautiful. But one grandson in Shalavan, he's taka, all right, follows in the footsteps to a certain degree of his grandfather, to a certain degree, because he didn't want to become a Rebbe and have that achrayer, he's teaching other subjects. But he's in teaching, inspiring. Okay, so to reiterate, we dealt with sports, we dealt with singing, we dealt with the Rambam, we dealt with the Tshuva. By the way, didn't Paskin from the Tshuva Lahalacha, he's writing, you gotta know who he's, again, when you write a Tshuva, you gotta know who he's writing to. You see, he's very machmir. He doesn't allow room to dance. This is it. And he knows who he's writing to. But when it comes halacha l'maisa, you have to deal with the broader picture and the individual. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was great at that. That much I can tell you. I had students would write to him, and he would give answers. I would jump off the roof. He writes to a girl, Michala, real. Beit, what should she do after Michala? Beit Yaakov Kadima. She wrote for advice. Beit Yaakov, understand? I had another student who blesses me until today, because everyone in BMT, every Rebbe was laughing at him, corresponding with the Rebbe, and I encouraged him. Today he's a big lawyer in Crown Heights, one of the aces in the greater Lubavitch scene. And Baruch Hashem. But the Rebbe, if you came to him, and not you're asking advice where to go, but you went and you studied and you're light years away from Beit Yaakov, he'll deal with you in your context. You follow me, Natan? That was his greatness. The average chassid never went to university. And professors, world-class professors, came to the Rebbe, and he dealt with them in their context. See, it's amazing how he could. The Rav was not that broad. If you came to the Rav and said, I don't want to go to college, you know what I write about in Washington with Rabbi Chaim Gold. The Rav was not, he had a shita, this is the way, but all right. But even within a shita, there was so much that if you research those 29 students, you have a bestseller, The Class of 1960 Revisited. My dear students, first of all, I want to thank you very much for honoring me with your presence. I've arranged with the guards downstairs that anyone who wants to come to my shi'a and mentions my name will be allowed into the building. I trust that all my students are vaccinated. I hope there are no dummies here who are fighting percentages. But Baruch Hashem. Are there any questions? Yes, Barak.
But with the Rambam, even though he spoke about Shlemus and like the value of Mani Torah, I mean, it seems to be a very broad term because the Rambam himself learned a lot of...
The Rambam was a medical doctor and a great philosopher, right? This is the old Prussian. Worse than that, he lived in Egypt. He paskins, you can live anywhere, but you can't live in Egypt. How much ink has been spilled on that? But you see, in life there's an interaction. Anyone who's mad at me that I don't have a beard and payas is stupid, because I'm in a time warp. This is the way I grew up. Who had a beard and payas? A beard and payas, that was a tzaddik, a big, a gong. Who am I to claim I'm on Reb David Lifshitz's level? You follow? So you got to understand, you're absolutely right. He was a poor example to what he's writing.
The other idea is that that's also Torah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, you could develop that too, everything he said, everything should be for the sake of Torah. But you see, where would you go when someone, my example is always, someone wants to be an expert in Chinese literature. And he teaches at the university, and he makes a good living, has plenty of time to learn. And you understand, you have to deal with the individual. And this is what I learned from the Rav, and I've learned this from all my years of teaching Torah. You remember the story I told you, that I had a gangster at Hebrew U, was dead drunk in 69. I remember his name, I don't want to mention his name. I hope he's alive yet, because he's no youngster today. And he's crying, and there's all the rabbis are phony. Only one rabbi, Rabbi Rothkopf, he was legitimate. And they told me this at the encyclopedia. People heard, people knew, because of contact with the university. And boy, was I proud. I said, all right, he's a gangster, he's this, that, the drugs, whatnot. Who knows? And his name pops up in the Ursa Meir, Greater History. One of their big rabbanim. I don't know if that was him or not. But wow. That's life. Okay, until we meet again. Tomorrow is the big leagues. I have to tell you in advance. Tomorrow, the big leagues. We're dealing with the real problems. Wow. All right. Until we meet again in health and happiness. That's for Danya. Yomo, wake up. Give me back the world. Yeah, Rabbi Wiener, give me back the world. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming, Barak. Regards. Natan, are you going to come anywhere? There goes the Broughton. You're getting rid of all the wires. God, what goes on? We can't win. Yeah. Go ahead. One second. We're trying to get everyone open, 1 second.
Allow.
Mark, you look tired.
That Mark.
That Mark.
I may be tired. I don't think I look as tired as I feel. Okay. Good. Can they hear it? Can you talk?
Can you speak? Yeah. Go ahead. Who wants?
Rebbe, it's Nachum.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Just one note. Rav Kook was talked about Rembrandt. I mean, Michelangelo is great, but
Rembrandt. Okay, sorry.
It was the light. When Rembrandt paints light, he said it was like the light that Hashem made on the first day of
creation.
Right.
Like so Rembrandt. I stand corrected. I'm happy to be corrected, but I would include Michelangelo in the same same godlook. How are your parents?
They're good. They're good. They're taking it easy because it's raining a lot there, but otherwise they're fine.
Okay, send love.
We're trading memories of Rabbi Dulitz with each other. You know, all the stories of that.
Oh, God.
He taught French too, you know, because he was from New Orleans, so he spoke French. So he taught French and English, I remember, at MTA. And he knew all of Shakespeare by heart, but when they changed editions, it wasn't the same line, so he stopped teaching it, because he would say, you know, that's Hamlet's scene, this, you know, line 520. They would say, but Rebbe, in the new edition, it's 550. He said, I can't teach us anymore.
Wow.
Yeah. Rebbe.
Fred, yeah.
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank you for covering this. I know you did it a lot because of my question, and I appreciate it. I might come back to you for some of the specific sources, but one question that I have is, how does this work on a national level? For example, Israel participating in the Olympics when we know that the athletes are probably going to be Mechallel Shabbos. Is there a position that because of the importance of Israel being among the states of the world that we have heterim or...
No.
How does that work?
No, it doesn't work because the question is not... This question will only come up when you'll have a real majority of the people of Israel, Shemesh Shabbat. What we have right now is a majority are Shemesh Shabbat, but it's Mesoratayim, lukewarm, etc. When you'll have a real majority and people will be learning, the question will come up. And the answer is no, we can't be Mechallel Shabbos, there's no Heta, just to play sports on Shabbos with all that's involved with television, money, gambling, and it's not. On the other hand, it would be the greatest Kiddush Hashem if the world understood Shabbat is Shabbat. The Pope already, our present Pope, who's a bit of a Reformed Catholic, already stated with awe that he admires the way the Jewish people observe Shabbat. Those that, you know, the frum people. So that's the Hilchata de Meshichata. Right now they had the, I'll ask a different question, the Miss Universe contest down in Eilat. They allowed in all these women from all over the world, and Israel and the Jews who want to come to Israel could not get in. In addition, can we sponsor a Miss Universe contest? I believe that part of it is women not exactly dressed like Beis Yaakov girls, proverbial Beis Yaakov girls. So these are delicate questions, and if we want to achieve Or LaGoyim Am Segula, we have to be on a higher level. But we're not ready yet to take these problems on. We just don't have the manpower. You see in the elections, Aguda and Shas, and Mizrahi, or what Smotrich's party, I think it's called Bayit Yehudi, which is the fallout of Mizrahi. B'sach HaKol, we get, if we have mazel, we'll wind up with 25 seats together. Then you have the Likud. The Likud has one of their most prominent members is a homo, a homosexual. He was the first homo. He was Saha Mishpatim. I believe he's the first homo ever to officially be a Saha Mishpatim, to be a Saha B'Memshelet Yisrael. So I can't put the Likud down. They'll support Torah, but for many of them it's a parva support, not a real zest and understanding. Well, there's Rav Hashem, we got to go further, we have to achieve. We have achieved, I'll give you an example of what I have seen in my lifetime here in Israel, 53 years. Years ago, you went to Dizengoff and you looked for a kosher place. You could go out of your mind until you found one. I remember yet when Halperin had a Milchiker restaurant and a Fleischiker restaurant, and these are probably the only kosher places on all of Dizengoff at that point in time. It's about 35 years ago. Today in Dizengoff, restaurant after restaurant is not only kosher, it's glatt kosher. You'll ask yourself why, and they interview the people, you know, the papers have to make a living, have to have what to publicize, what to write about. So they interview the restaurant owners. They give one simple answer. All of them give the same answer. No, I'm not that from today. I'm not a Bolshevik. The French Aliyah. The French Aliyah runs 99% kosher. Even if they're not perfect on Shabbos, but the Sfardim, the Mesoratayim, originally Algerians, Tunisians, Moroccans, Gerber, etc., 100% on Kashrut. And this has affected. You're talking of tens of thousands of people, many of them with money, who can afford to go to the nicest restaurants. And if you read in the Alonim, where they review the new restaurants, it's fabulous. I have nachat. I don't, who runs the restaurants in Tel Aviv? But I have nachat to read where in Tel Aviv, in the heart of Dizengoff Square, glatt kosher, one after another. That's the answer. Will we achieve it in my lifetime, in your lifetime? I don't know. But it's been a long process where we're at today and where we were at in 1948. Okay. Beryl, is that you looking at me there? Wow. So how do you stay up so late? Fred, where are you? Are you in Staten Island or Israel?
Oh, I'm in Rehovot. I made Aliyah.
Ah, so Baruch Hashem. And you got the email I sent you from Mark?
He heard your name,
and wow, he looks out. I see Vic there. All right, I want to wish everyone a Shavua Tov and a Baruch. Yeah.
Yeah, they say in America that glatt can be one or two sirchot. Not three, but one or two. How reliable it is in terms of chavak? There is some actual chavak, if that's reliable. There was some by the Deborah Singer, there was some in Aurora, Illinois, west of Chicago and Detroit. I'm not sure where they're doing it now for Sfaradim and Briskers. But the regular glatt, they say now, is not necessarily no sirchot. Except in the case of bison. When I was in South Dakota in the Schlacht House where they did the bison, which is Sufik Behemoth Sufik Chai, and they do Kisli without a bracha. I asked the Shoftim. They said in bison almost everything is halak. They just don't find sirchot.
I
don't know if there's any bison right now being shucked because the one that was in South Dakota moved to Dawson, Minnesota. And then they sold the company,
I can't answer, but my gut reaction is that the OU has to satisfy the Sfardim. There's a big market out there in Deal and Flatbush. What do you say, Mark?
What they call the glatt for the masses may have certain kind of small circles. I don't know technically, but the Sfardim and what we got at Brisk was specifically labeled. Base Yosef Glatt, where there were no
circles. All right, it has to be checked. I'm sitting here in Yerushalayim. I'm not sitting in Battery Park where the OU offices are. They have a whole floor dealing with Kashrut. But it would seem to me, money-wise, you got to include the Sfardim in your market, or you're leaving out 100,000 potential buyers or more. All right, I want to sign off and let them clean out the room. I apologize for wearing the hat. It has nothing to do with Frumkeit. It has to do with the cold. And if the doctors taught me long ago, if your head is warm and you have socks on, you're going to be healthy. And so far, I've proven that this winter, but I don't want to talk too loud. Al tiftach pel l'satan. But everyone in my family had a cold, and I'm the only one walking upright, laughing, and just trying to figure out how to get my knee joints to work again. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
Hi, Reverend.
Okay. Bruchen to you, bruchen to you.